When two worlds combine, it sparks into existence a brand new life of clarity and cosmic insight. This is the truest form of alchemy. Join Becky Gregory and Hillis Pugh on Cosmic Insight, only on Real Revolution Radio X.
Hello, everyone. Welcome here to Cosmic Insight, all you cosmic explorers. I am Rebecca Gregory here with my fabulous co-host.
Hillis Pugh, and it is such a great honor and joy to have the honorable, the humble Mr. Neil Donald Walsh here with us again today. Neil has written 39 books on contemporary spirituality and its practical application in everyday life, including the 9-book Conversations with God series. And his titles have been translated into 37 languages. And his latest book, The God Solution, that was published in December of 2020. We are here again to revisit with Neil about The God Solution and just to catch up to see what's been happening since December. So Neil, it's been an honor and thank you for coming back with us today.
Well, it's lovely to be here, and I appreciate the invitation, so thank you for inviting me back. How can I serve the moment?
You want to turn your camera back on?
I can turn my camera on if you think that serves the moment. Most people don't want to have to look at my face, but if you're okay with it, I'm okay with it.
We love seeing your face.
Yes,
I like to see the whole package.
Oh, well, okay, let me just...
Well, not the whole package. Okay,
sweetheart, Hillis has got to tell you, he's got to educate. Do not say to a man, I want to see the whole package.
Yeah, that could be a little
thank
much.
You for that. Thank you for that today.
Oh, I love it. So, Neil, you know, one of the questions that I think we got into a little bit but didn't expand too much last time is, and I feel that this so resonates with what's happening now on the planet with our times in our country, is the idea of the idea heroes. People who are what people may consider revolutionaries, or people who may be thought leaders, or people who may be just a bit ahead of their time.
A bit or a lot ahead of their time?
Probably a lot.
Well, it could be a little bit of both, but it does take courage to be an idea hero. And but you know what's interesting about that, my friend? I get the impression that many people really have a yearning to be what I call an idea hero. They may not have heard that phrase before. They may not have heard that label before. But many people, I'm discovering these days, have a yearning to make a difference. They really want to make a difference. They don't want to just go through their life and have it make no difference at all. But so there's almost a queue, almost a lineup of people who are now ready to step into becoming an idea hero. That is to put forward to those they know and love, and to total strangers as well, ideas that may not be immediately broadly accepted. One of the things that I invite people to do is to join what I call the Address Book Movement. And the Address Book Movement is just a little bit of a play on words that I've used to invite people to send to everybody in their personal address book the information that they would like those other people to receive with regard to how we can all step forward in a new way as we live our lives. Whenever I get an email from someone that says, boy, I love this new book, The God Solution, what a great book, I'm enjoying it a lot, I tell them, well, you know, thank you for telling me that. And if you want to really be an idea hero, send information about that to everybody in your address book. See, that's going to take courage. Forget about the general public, just people that you know personally well enough to have in your address book to reveal to them how you think about life, about God, about yourself, about the higher power, about the purpose of all of this, even that can take a great deal of courage, because a lot of us don't want everyone to know, or we don't feel comfortable with everyone knowing everything that we are feeling and believing about these major topics. Mm-hmm. So I always say to them, you know what? Thank you for the compliment. I'm glad you enjoyed the book. Dare you, double dare you to tell everybody in your address book why you like this book and what about it appeals to you, and then send them an invitation to take a look at the book as well. And in case people think, well, he's just trying to sell a bunch more books, actually, I placed the entire book at no cost on my Facebook page, one excerpt at a time. So every morning, another excerpt from the book. Of course, Facebook won't let you put the whole book up at once because it would take way too much room, but they will allow you to, you know, have several paragraphs. And so every day I put an excerpt from the book, and if you read all the excerpts, you wind up reading the entire book a little at a time. So that I want to make that clear so people don't think, well, he's just trying to sell books. No, actually, the book is available for reading at no cost at all on my Facebook page. And if you want to get a copy for yourself, that's up to you, but you don't have to in order to find out what the God solution is.
Yeah. I like that.
And I feel your book, you know, reading your book and being part of being had the opportunity to interview you for, and now here, the, you know, just honored to be with your presence again. So I feel your book is a movement of the future of how we should be. And I tell everybody about your book just because, for that reason, because it takes us to that point of where we need to be in our beingness and who we are now, of expressing ourselves from that place, from that gratitude and that pure love.
And you know what else, you know what's interesting about the book, guys? It places before our species, it places before humanity a very interesting question. I thought it was an interesting question. And the question is this: if you could start your own religion, what would it say? What would it believe? Mm-hmm. It challenges the reader to come up with a set of at least fundamental beliefs about the economy, about politics, about social interactions, and about spiritual interactions as well. What would your religion say? Mm-hmm. Just to give you one example.
Yes.
If you were to start your own religion tomorrow, would your religion say, if you don't belong to my religion, God says you're going to hell? No. There's only one true religion. And if you don't belong to, and I happen to belong to it, because in this case, I created the religion. So if you created your own religion, would the religion say that there's only one true religion in the world and everybody else is going to hell, no matter how kind they were, no matter how compassionate they were during their lifetime, no matter how gentle and caring and generous and loving they were, it doesn't matter. They're going to hell because they belong to the wrong religion. Is that what your religion would say? Would your religion, if you started your own religion tomorrow, if you had somehow, you were named chairman of the board of the world and you started your own religion, would your religion say, if you're gay, if your sexual experience is other than, other than what is practiced by the largest number of people, you're going to hell. You're going directly to hell.
Yep.
See. So the book challenges people to take a look at the role that religion has been playing, even for those who are non-religious, mm-hmm. but the role that religion has been playing in our society on this planet, and increasingly so in these days and times. You know, as I might have mentioned before, surveys show that 8 out of 10 people believe in a higher power of some sort. You know, there's a huge irony there. 8 out of 10 people believe that there is a higher power, but we can't agree on anything about it. We can't agree on the fine print. So we agree that we disagree. There is a higher power, but we can't agree. And because we can't agree on what the higher power is, what it wants, how it works, because we can't come to an agreement on that, there are, as we sit here today, 4,300 religions on the face of the earth. Yes. Not 6 or 8, not 5 or 10, not 20 or 30. Check it out. 4,300 separate religions on the face of the earth as we are speaking today, because we can't even agree about God.
I know, and that keeps us as a society in our consciousness in separation.
Yeah.
To put it mildly, and so the God solution, and what I've put forth in the book is, do you think it would be possible for us as a civilization to come up with at least one overarching idea, just a kind of an umbrella statement that we could all agree with, that no one could really seriously disagree with it? At least we'd have a starting point with regard to our understanding of who and what God is, and in fact, what God wants, what God needs, what God requires, what God demands, what God commands, and how God works, and how we can work, if I dare put it this way, hand in hand with God to produce the kind of life on this planet for which we have yearned for thousands of years. You know, religion is not new. We've had religions on this planet for thousands of years, and yet the world is a mess. How can the world be such a mess if there is a higher power? I mean, what's the point of having a God if the world is going to be the way it is?
Following the control of the religion that was placed upon us and not the teachings of God.
Yeah, exactly.
Which brings me
to my next point that I wanted us to really get into, because we know that there is this, you know, higher power. We know this higher power exists. And, you know, growing up in the different religions that I did, with being Baptist and then going to a Catholic school and then just all mixed up and confused. What I want to know is how, you know, the best way you can express through your experience the most effective way to connect to this higher power. Is it through what people believe to be prayer or meditation or anything that they feel that they can connect to this energy, the source, the higher power that there is?
Well, you know, there is no one way. In my experience, you're asking about my experience, and my life has shown me that there isn't I'm really glad Neil was on the show today, because he gave us the way, you know, to make that connection. All the ways you mentioned, any one of them, or all of them, you know, put together, could work. Prayer at a certain time of your day or of your week or of your life, meditation, you know, guided imagery, visualization, or simply writing on a yellow legal pad and asking God, you know, questions and seeing what comes up for you as your answers. But I can tell you the quality, in my personal experience, desire, pure, deep desire. I believe that desire is the foundational energetic. It's the originating energy that produces outcomes in our life. And when we have a pure, honest, authentic, and real desire to connect with the higher power, I believe that that desire sets out and projects into the universe an energetic that is, I want to say, magnetic, a magnetic energetic. I love poetry. It's a magnetic energetic. And I think that it's so magnetic that it draws to us, literally draws to us, our experience of the higher power. I want to make a point here, if I can. I'm not saying that it draws to us the higher power. See, the higher power is always in us. So we're not drawing something to us that wasn't there before we said our little magnetic energetic prayer. The higher power is in us, as us, and works through us all the time. We simply don't understand that, and we haven't found a way to have the experience of it. So if we have the desire, pure, authentic, true desire to make that connection, then the experience that the higher power already exists within us becomes our reality. We suddenly experience it. We wake up, you know, in some moment of our day and say, oh my gosh, I'm clear. Divinity resides within all of us. And if you please, within everything. And I've been denying it all this while. You know, one of the great masters of all time said, before the cock crows three times, you will deny me. Well, that is in fact what all of us are doing. Before, you know, 3 o'clock every morning, most people will deny that divinity resides not in the universe, but within them. And that's what's interesting. 8 out of 10 people agree that there is such a thing as a higher power, but probably 1 out of 10 might say, and that higher power resides within me. That I am an individuation of divinity. And so what I invite people to consider is that possibility. The possibility that you are an individuation of divinity. That your relationship to God is identical to the relationship of, to use a metaphor, a wave is to the ocean. The wave is not separate from the ocean. The wave is not something other than the ocean. It is simply an individual expression arising from the ocean, a magnificent, powerful, glorious expression. And when that expression is complete, the wave recedes back into the ocean. It's a marvelous metaphor that I was given in my conversations with God that helped me to understand, oh, I see, now I see my relationship to God is the same as the wave is to the ocean. So, you know, if you want to really be an idea hero, go out there and make waves.
Love it. You know, Neil, you make a really super good point about that, because we're taught, I know I was taught, you know, in religion, we're always taught the separation of God, that it has to be something separate from us. And that is part of us, and that divinity lies within us, you know. But we're always taught that it's just God and then us, but that's not the truth. And so I love that you bring that. And I think there's conversations we need to start having to accept that divinity of who we are and that sovereignty of who we are, because the world has taught us that it's separate and it's not.
Ken, I don't know, you know, I don't remember what I said the last time I was with you guys, but did I explain to you in our last program together what that separation theology produces ultimately?
You might have. I can't remember anything. So if you'd like to express it again, be awesome.
I would love to, because here's the problem. We do live, most people who believe in a God at all, believe in what I call a separation theology, which is, as you've just described, a theology that says that God is up here somewhere and we're down here somewhere, and never the twain shall meet, except perhaps on Judgment Day. When Hillis is going to be told, you're going down to the bad place because you decided to wear a goatee and a mustache, and that's against the rules. So, you know, or whatever the rules of the day are. But to get serious for a minute, a separation theology creates inevitably, I mean, it would be okay if that was the beginning and the end of it. Okay, you believe that God is separate. All right, fair enough. If that was the beginning and the end of it, but it's not, because a separation theology inevitably creates a separation cosmology, that is a cosmological holding on the earth, that we live in a milieu, in an environment where everything is separate from everything else. I'm separate from the earth, I'm separate from the trees outside, I'm separate from the universe and the planet, and of course I'm separate from you, that we're all separate from each other because we live in a separation cosmology. And you know what? That wouldn't be so bad. I mean, if that's as far as it went, okay, you have the belief, fair enough. But it doesn't stop there, because a separation cosmology inevitably produces a separation psychology. That is an individual psychological holding that says, oh my gosh, I'm separate from everything else. I'm separate from everybody, even my loved ones. I'm not connected to anything. I'm here on the earth all by my lonesome, all by myself. And when I put my head down on the pillow at night, I never have felt so lonely. Or when I'm facing a major, huge life problem, I've never felt so lonely because I'm all alone. And you know what? A separation of psychology, as sad as it might be, wouldn't be damaging if it stopped there. But it doesn't end there. No. Because a separation psychology inevitably produces a separation sociology. That is, entire societies that group themselves into separate units. The political party that I belong to, the religion that I belong to, the organization that I belong to. And so we've all separated with our own separate agendas. And you know what? Even that we could live with if it was the beginning and the end of it. But it isn't. No. Because a separation sociology inevitably produces a separation pathology. Pathological behaviors of self-destruction, observable on the planet for thousands and thousands of years. So we see that the fallout is unbelievable from a separation theology to a separation cosmology to a separation psychology to a separation sociology to a separation pathology. And that's the pathological problem. That's the cause of the illness and the sickness that visits our planet in the minds of billions of people today. And we can make it all heal itself by simply abandoning our idea of separation, that we're not separate from each other. We're not separate from life itself or the process of life. We are creating the process as we go along. And we are certainly not separate from that which we call the higher power. We are one with the divine. And if we decided to move forward with our politics, our economics, our social systems, and our spiritual understandings, move forward with an awareness of our oneness with each other and with all of it, it would change everything. We would find out that it would be impossible for us to treat others the way we are currently treating others on the planet these days. Somebody tell me what's going on with the sudden attack on Asian Americans in the United States. I don't know when this program will be telecast and broadcast on the internet, but yesterday, in my life right now, a man in New York was videoed kicking an Asian woman, 65-year-old little lady, in the stomach. And when she hit the ground from the impact of his kicking her, he kicked her in the head several times in the face. She had to be rushed to the hospital, and there were bystanders who did nothing. Two security guards at a hotel nearby were watching it. They're caught on camera watching this whole thing and did nothing to stop it. My dear, dear friends, what have we come to? What are we doing to each other? And who will be an idea hero and say, whoa, whoa, clearly there's something we don't understand about God, about life, and about ourselves, the understanding of which would change everything.
I feel that.
You know, yeah, I felt that. I don't know if you know, Neil, but both Rebecca and I were both very empathic. Sometimes we feel them, but you were speaking, I felt so much of that. And what came to my mind is something that I feel that we should address or talk again this go around. We mentioned it before, is the platinum rule that you mentioned in the book. And I feel that this is important because, you know, you just can't be an idea hero without having some sort of guidelines. And I feel this would be a perfect guideline. So, Neil, would you do us the honor of expressing what this platinum rule is?
Yes, everyone's heard about the golden rule. And we've been taught about the golden rule since we were children. Do unto others as you would have it done unto you. But there's a marvelous sociologist, and right now as I'm sitting here, I've forgotten his name. I think his name is Milton Bennett. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think his name is Milton Bennett. In any event, he's an American sociologist who suggests, no. Actually, we should have the platinum rule, not the golden rule. And he called it the platinum rule because he notices that platinum is actually more valuable than gold. So he calls this the platinum rule. Do unto others as they would have it done unto them. Now there's an idea hero. Do unto others as they would have it done unto them. Wow. If we ever embraced such a notion as a behavioral standard, the world would change overnight. But you know what? We can't even embrace the golden rule. We can't even treat others the way we want to be treated. We can't even go there. So it's like, wow, you know, what is going on? What is inhabiting the human mind that could allow us to treat others the way we treat others on this planet? Nation and nation, religion and religion, race with race, gender orientation with sexual orientation, men and women in the workplace. You know, what is it? What? And I get what it is, of course. We've already identified it. It can be identified in one word. One word has created the alienation that is sweeping the world. And the word is separation. We simply refuse to let go of our idea that we are separate from each other and separate from God.
So, yeah. Sorry, Rebecca. Just have this thing that's on my mind.
Go ahead. Okay. Go right ahead.
So in the vein of separation, you know, everything, you know, from racism to every ism that exists, do you feel that the essence of the belief of separation is due to someone wanting or desiring some form of power? You know, in essence of, you know, like being the one race or being the one that's to have that absolute power, to see that energy, to claim it, so that way I can be above all instead of we can be all.
I don't think, Hillis, there's any doubt in my mind that that's part of it, probably a big part of it. I don't think it's the whole of it, but I do think it's a huge part of it. Yes, we feel helpless, but you see, why do we want power? Here, you see, it's a circle. If you look logically at it, we start to see the circle. We yearn for power. We want to be the one race, the one people, you know, the chosen people. We want to be in the one religion. We want to belong to the right political party. And all the other political parties are, you know, crazy and they're the bad guys, you know, and we demonize everybody. So, yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Your observation, I think, is right on the money. I think that people want power, but why do they want power? I mean, what is this inner yearning to be the one who's powerful and therefore above the others? We belong to the right race. We belong to the right religion. We belong to the right political party. We're the ones in power. Why? Well, of course, the reason we yearn for power is because we feel helpless without it. And why do we feel helpless without it? Because we feel alone. Because we feel separate. We're right back where I was. That's the pathology. That's the pathology I was talking about. The cosmology that creates the psychology, that creates the sociology, that creates the pathology. The pathological yearning for power that allows us to grab for power. And then if we do get a little bit of power, to actually use that power to keep everyone else down, everyone else beneath us, to put our knee on somebody's neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds until they die.
It's very interesting.
What is that about? And how could any living human being condone such a choice and such a decision unless they feel so desperately alienated and so desperately afraid? Fear is what creates the need for power. But fear would disappear from the face of the earth if we understood that we are one with the divine and one with each other.
While you were saying that, it just brought me back to when it was coming to me, is going back to that power and that belonging, right back to, if we are not separated, we will all be with one. And by having that mindset of that power, it's once again just wanting to belong to the oneness and to it all.
And we want what we already have. See, yeah. The sadness of that is we want what we already have.
Yes.
And we simply refuse to accept it, to embrace it, because our culture and not just recently, but for thousands of years. Yes. The human culture has told us, no, you may not allow yourself to imagine that you and God are one, that you are united with the divine. And we, in some religions, that's called blasphemy, heresy, apostasy. And some religions can actually bring you up on ecclesiastical charges. And some religions have been known to put you to death for claiming that you and God are one. And but you know, here's the irony. We don't even have to claim that we and God are one. If it's too big of a leap for us, all we have to do is assert that we are one with each other.
Yes. That I am you. Other.
That I am you and you are me. That what I do for you, I do for me. And what I fail to do for you, I fail to do for me. It's as simple as that.
And I think too, Neil, isn't it just being kind to each other and just stemming from that loving heart and just accepting people for who they are and not judging them and understanding and just, like you said, just treating people with the love of your heart.
The sad part about all of this is that this is not new stuff. People sometimes in some circles, I'm called a new age, you know, a messenger, a new age author, new age teacher, whatever. They label me with the new age label. You know what? These are not new age ideas. What we're talking about here has been shared with humanity for thousands and thousands of years by all of the teachers of all of the world's major religions. Nothing new here.
We're laughing because we had a situation being called New Age. So we just went through that ourselves. So that's why I cracked up laughing. I'm like, here it comes again. It's always showing up, isn't it? But you're so right. It's just the simple teachings of how we should be.
I wouldn't even take the word should out of there. I wouldn't say, ladies and gentlemen, don't should on yourself.
Yeah.
Take the word should out of your vocabulary. It's not something we should do because people don't want to do what they think they should do. We have a natural revulsion. We have a natural pushback to thinking we have to do stuff that we should do. We are invited.
Yeah.
We are joyously invited by life to find a new way to be human and to see if there's a new way to define God itself. Cool.
I have to read this whole thing, this paper. Where's that little thing I had today? I got this little, I don't know why you were saying that, the joy. And I got this little thing in the mail, something I ordered. And it says, make joy your everyday adventure. And I just love that because it's so true.
And take fear out of the equation.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a new acronym for fear. F-E-A-R. Feeling excited and ready.
Oh, I like that one.
Love that.
Thank you for
feeling excited and ready.
Ah. Everybody write that one down. That's awesome.
That's how I felt today before you hopped on. Feeling ready and excited. Wait, feeling excited and ready.
Remember how you used to feel when you were like 7 years old or 9 years old and in the line for the roller coaster and you're in line and you got your little ticket, you know, you bought your ticket for 10 cents, whatever it was at the fairground, and you're standing in line and you don't know whether to be scared or happy. So you decide to be both at once.
Yeah.
Feeling excited and ready.
I think we should make t-shirts for that.
Yeah, we should. But you know, Neil, close to the end of the book, you talk about how God fixes everything. And what I want to us address now is, you know, we talked about the separation. We talked about wanting to evolve into oneness, to be in that all and to have anything rise up to meet us. But now it's like, do we want God to intervene? Do we want or expect God, this higher power, to intervene? And then if so, what does it offer, you know, and how will it connect or intervene with our free will? Because we have free will, because, you know, those who believe in God or believe in a higher power, say, well, there's no free will, everything is predetermined, predestined, it is what it is. But then there's this component of free will. So how does God, this higher power that lives in us, really steps into everything?
in my understanding, and of course I, you know, I'm real clear, I'm very clear that I could be wrong about all of this, but in my understanding, after having my Conversations with God experience, which produced 9 dialogue books with back and forth question and answer conversations, and then which also produced 30 books after that, 30 books that explore the dynamics of that conversation. In my understanding, from that experience, God does not intervene in the way we seek of it. That is, God doesn't say, you know what, I got to see if I can get Hillis to grow hair again. I don't like him to have, you know, a bald head. I mean, look, he can grow hair on his face, so why shouldn't he be able to grow hair on his head? I know what I'll do. I'll intervene. I'll intervene in his life. And, you know, I mean, you see, God doesn't step in to our lives individually or collectively and cause things to happen. What God does is give us the power to cause things to happen. It's God's great joy to empower us through what we popularly now call metaphysics. That's the final element of our understanding of God that we have not really embraced. That there is a higher power, and God has invited all of us to use that higher power. And how to use it is by understanding and mastering, if you please, mastering metaphysics. That is the mechanics. Mastering the mechanics of how to use the energetics of the universe, what some people have called mind power, the power of positive thinking, if you please, how to use those mechanics to produce the outcomes that we wish to produce individually and collectively on the earth. And we're simply not doing it. We're simply not using those metaphysical tools at the level that would cause us to collectively and individually produce the outcomes for which we yearn. But it's not because the tools aren't there. It's because we simply either don't understand them, or even those of us who do understand them don't use them nearly as effectively or as consistently as life invites us to do. So we're out here waiting for God to do something, and God is saying, guys, you know, I didn't create a fiefdom. My purpose was not to create a civilization of servants who have to do what I say, and, you know, and if they don't, you know, I punish them. I didn't create a fiefdom. I created a kingdom, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, in which I empowered everybody to command the forces that produce the outcomes that you desire. You know, and I have even said to audiences, our opportunity, if you can stand to hear these words, is to actually, dare I say it, to command God. And the place goes crazy. The audiences, they start squirming. Well, what is this guy saying? This guy's really talking about an idea hero. Get him off the stage. Get him off the podium. What's he talking about? We can't command God. We have to beg God. We have to supplement. We have to supplicate with God. But no, God doesn't want us to beg God or supplicate. God wants us to ask God for nothing. God says, tell me, just command the outcome. Yeah. If you think I'm kidding, if you think I'm lying, you think I'm exaggerating, listen to how one of the great masters of all time taught us to pray. He taught us to pray, give us this day our daily bread. That's what the sentence says. It doesn't say, please.
Yeah.
It doesn't say, we're begging you. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, and lead us not into temptation. I'm telling you what I want. And when you read the Lord's Prayer and you see it the way it is, there's not a supplication in the entire prayer. It's simply a series of direct statements
And it's so funny, as a society, we've got out of speaking in direct statements.
Because of the separation that has us, that have created a new belief in the human culture and the history of humanity, to say that we are less than which we ask for. So in essence, this is why we have to, as New York, as you can put it, beg or plead to get what we want, as opposed to commanding what we
want. And you know what's interesting about that, Ellis, is that when we create a cosmology, when we create an understanding that we have to beg and plead with God and supplicate with God so that God will intervene in our lives directly, then we have to figure out, well, now, wait a minute. In order for God to say yes to what I'm begging for, I have to be worthy.
Yes.
Because if I'm not worthy, mm-hmm. So that sets up a whole system where, first of all, I'm supposed to beg God, but God will only say yes to those prayers that are sent up to God by those who are worthy. So if you're not, I was born and raised, I know a lot of you folks are going to find this hard to believe, but I was raised as a 7-year-old, I was told directly, if you're not Catholic, you're not going to heaven. Did you hear me? I didn't say if you're not Christian, you can't even be a Protestant, you can't even be a Methodist, or God forbid a Baptist, my God. and you can't be a Mormon. You don't understand, there's only one true religion, and it's not even the Christian religion, it's the Roman Catholic religion. And if you're not Roman Catholic, you are going to go to hell when you die, or at least to purgatory. You know, I asked the priest when I was 9 years old, well, Father, what if I was a Baptist, but I didn't commit any bad sins? Would I go to hell? And the priest said, no, son, you'd go to purgatory. I said, what's purgatory? What the heck? What is it? What's purgatory? Oh, it's kind of like a suburb of hell and heaven. It's like hell. It's like hell, only it's not forever. I've had a couple of marriages like that, but that was a joke, guys. You're supposed to, that was in front of an audience, that gets a big laugh. So, purgatory is a place where you're, this is Roman, and by the way, I'm not making this up. This is not a punchline. This is actual Roman Catholic theology. Purgatory is a place that you go temporarily until your sins, your minor sins, your spiritual misdemeanors are burned from your soul. And then you can go to heaven ultimately. Hell is a place where you never get out. But purgatory is kind of like, a temporary sentence. And this is the God that we are told to believe in. God who sends you, and you know what, one of the sins you could be burned for? I was told, I remember when I was 9 years old, if you miss Mass on Sunday, I'm not making this up, folks. Missing Mass on Sunday without a good excuse, if you're taking care of an ill parent or if you have to work, fair enough. But when I was 9 years old, I went to the playground one Sunday morning. I thought, I go to Mass every single Sunday of my life, but there's a big game today. I'm going to go down to the playground. I went to the playground instead. And it just so happened that week, the parish priest, the pastor, came in and gave us catechism class. And as it happened that week, he was talking about, mortal sins and venial sins and this, that, and the other. And if I miss Mass, that I've committed a sin, and you're going to be burned in the fire of purgatory, and you don't think that sent me to confession in the next hour and a half? I mean, I ran down. I'm 9 years old. My 9-year old heart is beating. I'm not making this story up. I got so scared of God. I raced down to the confessional, and I went to confession that day. Father, forgive me. I've sinned. And the priest, got this 9-year old kid on the other side of the curtain. He said, well, tell me, my son, what did you do? And I said, I didn't go to Mass yesterday. I missed Mass. I went and played in the playground instead. God bless the priest. A sweet, sweet man. He just said, oh, son, I'm sure that's forgivable. I think God would understand. Go out there in the sanctuary and say three Our Fathers and three Hail Marys and three Glory Bees. And it wouldn't hurt if you lit a candle at the novena stand and put a nickel in. You know, I mean,
yeah, if that's the case, only half of me is going to go to heaven, because the other half of me was Baptist. So Baptist and Catholic, what are you
gonna do? And the other half of the kids don't have a nickel.
Yeah.
To light a novena candle. But if you're a Baptist, of course you're not going to go to heaven. Of all people.
Oh, I'm still laughing with you on that, Neil, because I was raised Catholic, and that just had similar stories. So I can, it's right here. I went through the.
And you know what? I want to make this point before I say goodbye. May I make one last point here?
Oh, definitely.
I don't want anyone to think I'm religion bashing or Catholic bashing. I'm not. I'm just simply describing. If describing what is being taught sounds like religion bashing, then I'm sorry. But let me make this point. I'm not suggesting for a minute, nor does Conversation with God in all of the 9 volumes, doesn't say for 1 minute that religions are bad or wrong. What the point is that's being made in the dialogue is religions are simply incomplete. They simply don't have all the data. So we are like children. We're like children who have learned how to add and subtract, to use a metaphor. We've learned how to add and subtract, and we think that's all there is to mathematics. But guess what? There's geometry and trigonometry and algebra and higher math, if you please. And we think that adding and subtracting is all we need to know. And to use that as a metaphor, we have been taught certain things about God, and we think that's all there is to know. So my point is not that religions are bad. They're simply incomplete in their data. There's more to know on this subject. And that's why I've gone around the world the past 20 years asking the following question. Is it possible? Just possible that there's something we don't fully understand here about God, about life, about each other, and about ourselves, the understanding of which would change everything.
Yes.
The question.
Thank you for that, because it's so
Thank
true.
You so much. And, I wish I could be in Seattle this weekend, where you're going to be talking about the metaphysics of the God Solution at the bookstore. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
Well, it's an online event. I don't want anyone to be confused. I'm not going to be there in person. It's an online event.
Online event.
Oh, I don't know how I can watch it, because I so want to see that, because I believe, as you mentioned moments ago, that is the missing piece, the metaphysics of it. Because it's a scientific principle, a theory, in how we can connect to this energy, to utilize it, to break down some of the barriers, if you will.
So can you leave everyone with the magic ingredient?
I have redefined God as pure love. 2 words as a new definition of God, pure love. When I roll that out in front of an audience and I say, let me suggest that God could be redefined in 2 words. We don't need to go into deep theology. We don't have to get to a theological seminary and study for 4 years. Let me give it to you in 2 words. God is pure love. And when I roll that idea out in front of an audience, somebody inevitably stands up and says, well, wait, nobody disagrees with that. Of course God is love. Everyone gets that God is love. That's not a piece of new information, Mr. Walsh. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I didn't say God is love. I said God is pure love. And there's a difference between pure love and what most humans understand the word love to mean. Pure love is the kind of love that needs, wants, hopes for, requests, and commands nothing in return. You need nothing. You demand nothing in return for the giving of your love. The joy is experienced in the expression of the love, not in what you think you're going to get back. Not in what you hope you're going to get back. And certainly not in what you demand that you get back because you love someone. So the question is, can we believe in a God who loves us so much, who is the essence of love itself, that it needs, demands, requires nothing in return? That would create a whole new theology on the face of the earth. And even more than that, it could form the basis of a whole new ethic, not just a whole new theology, but a whole new political ethic, a whole new economic ethic, a whole new social ethic, and yes, a whole new spiritual ethic, a whole new way to be human that says, you know what? I'm going to demand and require nothing of you for the goodness that I'm going to give you, because I believe in a higher idea. I happen to think that what goes around comes around. And it doesn't even matter if it doesn't, because guess what? I'm a spiritual entity. I'm not this. I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. I'm a spiritual entity, and I need nothing in order to find joy, peace, serenity, happiness, and divinity within me, because that's what I am made of. So is there a closing thought that I would leave with everyone? Yes. Step into who you really are and demonstrate that in every moment of your life and watch your life change. But be careful. Be careful, because this stuff can change your life overnight.
And again, thank you so much, Neil, for your time again today and your presence. And I want to tell you, since you've touched my world and I've read your book, it's really assisted me to open up to a whole other level. So I thank you for being who you are and spreading your word and your heart to the world, because it means so much now.
You're very nice to say those things, both of you. And thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to share this time with you. I appreciate it very much.
Yes, Neil, thank you for being the idea hero to us and to so many for everything that you're doing to help shape and shift the ideas, the concepts that humanity has into a better place for here and eternity. So thank you so much, Neil, for having that.
Those are very kind words from you as well, and I appreciate those sentiments. Thank you for sharing that with me, and I hope that everyone will find some value in the God solution.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this amazing week of Cosmic Insight, and I hope that you receive some very insightful tips that you carry in your day. Until next time, everyone. Thank you. Mwah.
But heard instead,
dear listeners,
through podcast radio
on realrevolutionradio.com.
Never before has inspirational podcast radio been taken to this next level of wow. Until now. Today, in the age of information, more and more people are searching for answers and in solutions and how to better approach and perceive every day-to-day concerns by tuning in to realrevolutionradio.com. Isn't it about time we take back our lives back in consciousness? consciousness, in a higher state of awareness, in the evolution of our own state of higher well-being. Yes, we can do so consciously every day by tuning in to the many groundbreaking and third eye-opening podcasts. Our new Cleveland-based network of over 33 paradigm-shifting internet talk shows. Only on RealRevolutionRadio.com. Be part of that change. Evolve. Be inspired.